The instruments in this case are all trumpets and horns. That is to say, they are all sounded by blowing air between tensed lips. They come from all parts of the world, and they are made of many different materials. The modern European members of this family, such as trumpets and trombones, are usually made of brass, and so instruments of this type are often called brass instruments. But as long as there is a tube or a vessel to blow into, any material will do, and so will any shape. One can make trumpet-like noises with any bits of tubing, curtain rods, water pipes, plastic tubing, hosepipe, and so on. It doesn't matter whether it is straight or curved, coiled or tied in knots. All one has to do is put the lips to one end of the tube or to a hole in its side and blow like this. By altering the tension of the lips, different notes can be obtained like this. But that was just with the lips, and from here on the acoustics of tubes come into the picture. Many of the details have not yet been satisfactorily explained, nor can one find all the whys and wherefores in any of the textbooks on the acoustics of musical instruments. Much more work has been done on the complicated instruments of the European orchestra than on the comparatively simple instruments that you see here. What can be said is that the notes one gets depend on the length of the tube, whether its bore is cylindrical or conical, and what sort of cone, and on the ratio of the diameter of the bore to its length. If one has a bore properly and deliberately constructed for the purpose, such as the trombone you will hear in a moment, one can make it produce any of a series of notes called natural harmonics. These are a long way apart at the bottom of the instrument's range, and get closer together towards the top. The pitch of the fundamental, or lowest harmonic, depends upon the length of the tube. The longer the tube, the lower the fundamental, and, because all the harmonics should always be the same distance apart, the lower each one of the series is, compared with the same harmonic on a shorter tube. There seems to be a limit or ceiling to the height that each player can reach, almost regardless of what instrument he is playing, so that if the tube is a long one with a low fundamental, it is easier to get a high number harmonic. Here are the first 16 of the series. You will have noticed that there are gaps between some of them, and that others are out of tune to our usual scale. In modern European instruments, these gaps are filled, and the out-of-tune notes replaced, by using valves to open sections of additional tubing, so altering the length of the instrument and introducing other notes. Some earlier European instruments, and some from other parts of the world, had finger holes in the tube, which, when opened, shortened the tube in effect, so raising the pitch. Some people have found that they could lower the pitch by putting a hand into or over the open end, and sometimes, if the ratio of bore to length is right, one can alter the pitch without using harmonics or other aids, just by altering the lip tension. All these methods you will hear as we go round. The simplest instruments are tubes on which one or two notes can be sounded. These make their effect by playing figures on these notes, or by the rhythmic use of one note, or by playing their one note along with several other tubes of different length, each playing their one note. Now, if you'll look at the case while facing the totem pole, we will describe these instruments in detail. First, facing you, are two shofarot. These are the ram's horns of the Bible. The shofar is still blown in the synagogue, and we believe that the calls which are blown on it today are the same that Joshua used when he brought down the walls of Jericho. The calls must have meant something originally, just as each of today's bugle calls means something, but unfortunately we don't know what. Each call has a name, but they only mean the blast or the din, and so on. Taking them in the order in which they are used in the synagogue today, they are Tekiah, Shavorim, Teruah, and the great blast, Tekiah Gedolah. The shofar is made by heating and straightening and flattening a ram's or a goat's horn, cutting off the tip and boring a hole with a hot wire down to meet the natural cavity. The tip is usually shaped out a bit to make a small mouthpiece, and the open end carved into a decorative shape. The shofar is one of the instruments that prevent one from making any clear distinction between trumpets and horns. It used to be said that a trumpet was of mainly cylindrical bore and a horn conical. The shofar is obviously a horn. It's made of a horn, the name is always translated ram's horn, and the alternative name, keren, means horn. But the cylindrical tube made by the hot wire is usually longer than the natural conical part. There is no safe distinction between the two terms, so one can use trumpet and horn interchangeably for any instrument of this type, except, of course, for the European orchestral instruments where they are proper names. Hanging below the shofarot is an English hunting horn. This is the instrument used by fox hunters and so on today. Because the tube is so short, it can only produce its fundamental, but this is one of the instruments whose pitch can be varied by lip tension, so that the huntsman can do this. In slow motion, on the floor of the case is a key bugle. This was a military band instrument around the time of the Napoleonic Wars and was invented in this country. The keys cover holes, and by opening and closing them, the player was able to fill up the gaps in the harmonics of the ordinary bugle, where the top note is the eighth harmonic. The key bugle became the solo instrument of the band and retained its popularity until the advent of the cornet with its valves displaced it. A valve instrument can stand much more knocking about than a keyed instrument and still remain playable, and three valves are easier to learn to handle than five or six keys. Also, except in the hands of a really expert player, the more holes that are opened, the worse the tone gets, whereas there's no great difference of tone with valve instruments. Moving round the case to the left and still on the floor, you will see another English instrument with finger holes, a serpent. This was the bass of the military band and was also used in the orchestra by composers such as Mendelssohn. It was used too by church bands where there was no organ or where the organ was not powerful enough to carry single-handed against the congregation. Thomas Hardy described such a band, and they continued with the serpent almost into living memory. The serpent's date of invention is not known exactly, but it is thought to go back at least to the 16th century. This instrument is comparatively late and was made between 1808 and 1814. In the hands of a good player, it had a rich and sonorous tone and was capable of a considerable range. The serpent was usually made of wood, sometimes of papier-mâché, and occasionally of copper. The walls are quite thin, and the instrument was delicate and easily damaged, so that with improved technology, it was superseded first by more closely folded wooden instruments, and then by a metal instrument which can be seen beside it, the ophicleide, whose name means keyed serpent. Each hole is covered by a key, so that the size of the hole is not limited by the size of the finger, nor does the hole have to be within the reach of the finger, because the key can have a long shank. Larger holes improve the tone. Metal is stronger than wood, and dents can be knocked out more easily than breaks in wood can be repaired. It is much easier for professional instrument makers to make a metal tube and solder it together than to carve, joint, and glue a wooden tube. The ophicleide was the military and orchestral base for Mendelssohn, Berlioz, and so on, but was eventually replaced by the bass tuba, just as, and for the same reasons as, the cornet replaced the key bugle. Although the ophicleide had superseded the serpent in professional circles, the serpent long outlasted the ophicleide in the village churches and bands, because it was simpler to play and easier for the village craftsmen to mend or to make. An ophicleide would have to be bought, but a serpent could be made by any good craftsman. Above the ophicleide is a simple bamboo tube from the Greek island of Carpathos. This produces one note of surprising sonority. To its right are two Swedish fingerhole horns. Instruments of this type were common all over Europe in the early Middle Ages. Many illustrations of them can be seen in manuscripts. They only survive today in Scandinavia, where they are used for dances and so on in the villages and the mountains. They seem difficult to play and to have a small range of available notes, but this is one of the biggest problems with instruments in a museum. You are surrounded here by instruments from all over the world, each of which was once played by someone who spent as much time learning to play it well as a musician does in learning his own instrument in this country. Nobody can learn to play them all properly. Some, yes, but one can only play a few notes on the rest. Until we find a proper player for these, as we have done with the Tibetan instruments, those few notes will have to give you an idea of what the instrument can do, but not necessarily of what it does in its own home. The smaller of these two horns has a very jagged edge to its mouth hole, but the larger sounds like this. Next, we have fragments of a trumpet of cast bronze of the Irish Bronze Age, dating from about 600 BC. These trumpets, like their earlier cousins, the Danish lyre, were found in peat bogs, which have preserved the metal. The lyre are much bigger than the Irish instruments, and so are capable of more notes, but we have no idea of what notes they did play, quite possibly only one at the bottom of the range. They represent one of the most tantalizing mysteries of our field. A lyre is capable of any Beethoven trumpet part, and we shall never know what music was played on them, nor will we ever know what part they or these Irish horns played in the life of the people who made them with such skill. At the end of the row is another shofar, this time from Syria instead of Europe as were the others. Jewish communities all over the world use the same calls that you have already heard. Above the shofar is a buffalo horn from Asia Minor. These are used for signaling and for calling cattle. The sound is powerful. Next to it is a Syrian bock made from an ibex horn. It sounds... The last on this row is a Cornish foghorn. These horns, and also conches, were used by the fishermen until the Board of Trade put a stop to the practice around 1880. It was felt that since blowing these instruments requires a knack and some skill, it was too risky to allow their use when rough seas or the cold might interfere with the fishermen's coordination, and mechanical foghorns were insisted upon. Another advantage of the mechanical type is that they cannot run out of breath. The horn sounds like this. Above it, on the top shelf, is a Swiss cowherd's horn. This looks like the old illustrations to the nursery rhyme of Little Boy Blue, and it has exactly the same function as his horn. It's used to call the cows and sounds. Next to it is a large horn said to be an old Norwegian instrument. We are hoping to get an accurate dating from the type of ship which is carved on it. This may represent a legend, since it seems unlikely that the combination of ship and squirrel is purely decorative. The last instrument on the top shelf is a cow horn with finger holes, again a Scandinavian instrument used similarly to the goat horns on the shelf below. Coming now to the other end of the case, we have a number of instruments from South America. The top one is a pottery trumpet of the Chimú type. It was found in archaeological excavations at Trujillo in Peru. The open end is molded as a shark's head. These instruments are normally well made and have a proper mouthpiece, which makes them very easy to blow. This one sounds like this. Below it are two Jivaro pottery trumpets. These seem to be clay imitations of cow horns or gourds. If cow horns, they must be later in style than Columbus's discovery of America, since the cow was unknown there until it was imported from Europe. The other pottery instrument here, the double globe, is certainly derived from a gourd. This is very difficult to blow, because the mouth hole is in the center of the flat bottom, which makes it awkward to get the lips to it. When one succeeds, it sounds like this. The conch must have had something attached to it. Probably a decorative casing which has vanished over the centuries, because unless all the small holes are stopped up, it produces no sound. The last of these American instruments is a jaguar's skull, plastered all over with wax to seal up all the gaps in the bone. It is said that this is used to imitate the jaguar's roar and to attract the animals to the hunter. Turning now to the other side of the case, we have on the top row first, an Indian side-blown brass trumpet. This is made for the Maria Gons by a neighboring tribe, the Garcias, in imitation of buffalo horns. Both these and the buffalo horns are used for festivals and in the temples. The brass ones are much preferred if there is enough money to pay for them. The buffalo horns are usually side-blown, so the brass copies are made the same way, though end-blown ones do exist. Many people have found that it is easier to drill, burn, or cut a hole in the side of a horn than to cut off the tip, smooth it, drill down to the natural cavity, and then enlarge the hole so that it is big enough for the lips. Another advantage of the side-blown horns is that it is possible to drill an additional hole in the tip, which does not need to be enlarged, but is used as a finger hole. The sound on this instrument is altered by covering the open end with the hand. Next, we have two Tibetan instruments used in the monastery services. The upper, of copper and brass, is used by the full lamas. The lower, made of a human thigh bone, the femur, is used by the lay monks. They are played along with bells and drums and accompany chanting. We have been fortunate in that these have been recorded for us by the Venerable Tulku Chime Yongdong, so that we can hear them as they are meant to be played. First, the metal instrument. And now the thigh bone. Next is another buffalo horn, this one from Siam, used like the other on the far side of the case for signaling and as a curfew instrument. Standing beside it is an instrument from the Naga Hills. The Nagas were fascinated by the sound of the bugles from the nearby British Army camps and designed an instrument on which they could play the same calls. Their original instruments were simple bamboo or wooden tubes, which could not get as many harmonics as a bugle. So they replaced them with these instruments made of a number of segments of bamboo, each fitting into the next, so as to make a stepped conical tube. It sounds like this. Next to it is a folded Indian metal trumpet. These are quite common in India, but nobody knows whether the Indians first thought of folding them for themselves or whether they are copies of European instruments. The first ships visiting India would certainly have had such instruments on board, so they are of some considerable antiquity in design, whichever came first. On the next shelf are a number of African instruments. First, an end-blown ivory horn from Kordofan. The end-blown trumpet is comparatively rare in Africa. The side-blown is much commoner. Ivory, horn, gourd, and wood are used according to tradition and to availability. Many of the African instruments have the finger hole in the tip, which produces a second note when it is opened. This is so with the next instrument, an ivory trumpet from the Congo. With the hole closed, it sounds like this. And with it open, like this. Stopping the open end with the palm of the hand, it sounds like this. The newer oryx horns are very flexible instruments and can be lipped up and down like this. Next is an antelope horn, again with a finger hole, which produces these notes. And which can also, of course, be hand-stopped. Next to it, we have an instrument of twisted bark from Nigeria. This was said by the collector to be a trumpet, but when one tries to blow it, it folds up like a spring. One has to use some pressure to seal the lips to the end of the tube and prevent air from leaking out around the sides. Either it was originally a more substantial instrument, possibly with a core of harder material, or, and more likely, It was a type of oboe which has lost its reed. Coiled bark oboes are known from Europe, Southeast Asia, Oceania, and South America. Some can be seen in the curtained case to your right. On the floor of the case are a number of conches. Shells are used as trumpets all over the world, very often as ritual instruments as well as just for signaling. In India in particular, they are sacred instruments, so much so that when they are used as libation vessels, any water poured into them is turned into holy water. No prayers are necessary, the touch of the conch is sufficient. Starting from the left, we have first another foghorn from Cornwall, which was used by a fisherman until the Board of Trade ruled against it, as with the ox horn on the other side of the case. Next to it is a shell used at the festival of Piedigrotta in Naples. Noise is a great feature of this festival, and many loud instruments are used. This shell has first had the skirt cut off by cameo cutters. Next, on its brass stand, is one of the Indian instruments. These have the most powerful and trumpet-like sound of any of the conches. They are also used in Tibet, where they are played like this. That was another of the recordings that the Tulku Chime Yongdong made for us. Next is a Japanese shell. These were originally the war trumpets of a sect of militant hermits, the Yamabushi. They used to appear from their mountain fastnesses and fall upon the villages for whatever plunder they could obtain. Nowadays, the conches are used in the temple rituals of the same sect. They have a low-pitched, powerful note. This same shell, the Triton, is found all over the Pacific Islands, sometimes end-blown and sometimes side-blown. In the Solomons and on Malekula, the pitch is often altered by putting the hand into the open mouth like this. In other areas, such as New Guinea, signals made up of long and short blasts are blown, such as this one, which is sometimes a general gathering call, sometimes a call to a fight, and sometimes the signal of a successful return from a headhunting expedition, according to its area.